He lifted my chin and brushed his fingers over my throat, where it was still swollen from his momentary lapse of reason in the shower. He had a strong grip.
Sorry about that.
Care to explain? He lowered his head.
I thought you were someone else.
Who else? In lieu of an answer, he put his fingertips on a pulse point. He seemed to revel in the feel of it, the proof of life flowing through my veins. Is it the demons you told me about? I asked.
Yes.
He said it so matter-of-fact, so casually, one would think demons tried to kill him on a regular basis. He told me about them only last week when I found out who he really was. He'd said they were after me, but to get to me, they'd have to go through him. I thought he was speaking metaphorically. Apparently not. Are they... I stopped mid-sentence and swallowed hard. Are you okay?
I'm unconscious,
he said, edging closer, his tongue wetting his full mouth. My stomach somersaulted, but only in part because of the tongue. You're unconscious? What do you mean? He had braced a hand against the countertop on either side of me, imprisoning me within his sinewy arms.
I mean, I'm not awake,
he said a heartbeat before nipping my earlobe with his teeth, just hard enough to send a quake skimming over the surface of my skin. The deep tenor of his voice reverberated through my bones, liquefying them from the inside out. I fought hard to focus on his words instead of the turmoil each syllable generated, each touch. He was like chocolate-covered heroin, and I was an addict through and through. I'd had him inside me before. I'd known heaven for a brief period of time, the experience so surreal, so earth-shattering. I was certain he'd ruin me to all other men forever. Seriously, who could compete with a being created from beauty and sin and fused together with the blistering heat of sensuality? He was a god among men. Damn it. Why aren't you awake? I asked, struggling to redirect my thoughts. Reyes, what happened? He'd been busy nibbling his way to my collarbone, his hot mouth evoking seismic activity at each point of contact. I really hated to interrupt, but, Reyes, are you listening to me? He raised his head, a sensual grin playing at the corners of his mouth, and said,
I'm listening.
To what? The sound of blood rushing to your nether regions?
No,
he said with a husky chuckle that made me tingle everywhere.
To your heartbeat.
He leaned in again, began the aerial assault again. Seriously, Reyes, how did you get hurt?
Painfully,
he whispered into my ear. My chest constricted with his answer. Time out, I said, grabbing the wrist of a hand that was doing the most amazing things to my girl parts. He twisted his hand around and wound his fingers into mine.
You're putting me in time out?
Yes, I said as a shaky sigh slid through my lips.
If I don't go, do I get a spanking?
A burst of laughter escaped before I could stop it. Reyes, I said in admonishment, we need to talk.
So talk,
he said, stroking my wrist with his thumb. I placed an index finger on his shoulder and nudged. Let me rephrase that. You need to talk. Please tell me what happened. Why are you unconscious? He let out a slow breath and leaned back to focus his liquid brown eyes on mine.
I told you last week. They found me.
The demons?
Yes.
What do they want?
The same thing I want,
he said, his eyes raking over my body.
But perhaps for different reasons.
He'd explained before that they wanted me, the portal, a way into heaven. I had no idea they would go to such lengths. Are you still alive?
My corporeal body is like yours. It's harder to kill, much harder than most humans.
Relief flooded every cell in my body. I took a deep breath and said, tell me what's going on. Exactly.
Exactly. Okay. They're waiting for exactly one of two things to happen.
Which are?
For my body to die so they can take me back to hell, or for you to find me. One would give them access to the key,
he said, indicating the smooth, flowing lines of his tattoos with a nod. Amazingly, his tattoos were a map to the gates of hell. Without it, the hazardous journey through the void of eternity rarely ended well for any entities trying to escape.
And the other would give them access to heaven.
He looked at me point blank.
Either would make them exceedingly happy.
Then tell me where your physical form is, and we can, I don't know, hide you. He shook his head in regret.
Afraid I can't do that.
My brows shot together. What do you mean you can't do that? Reyes, where are you? A humorless grin tipped one corner of his mouth.
In a safe place.
You're safe from the demons? I asked, my voice full of hope.
No, he answered. You're safe from the demons.
When he went for a jugular again, I pulled back. So they know where you are? They're trying to kill you? What he was proposing sounded like my worst nightmare. Injured and helpless somewhere, with a madman trying to kill me. I'd never considered the culprit to be demonic, but now that I had new fodder, surely my reoccurring nightmare would update its software to reflect an evil presence. Wonderful. With a loud sigh, he stepped back and sank into the chair at my computer desk, propping his feet up and crossing them at the ankles.
Do we really have to do this now? I may not have much time.
My heart stumbled in my chest. I wondered how much time he had, how much time we had. I didn't have a table and chairs, but I had a snack bar with a couple of bar stools. I sat at one and turned to him. Why won't you tell me where you are?
Lots of different reasons.
His gaze slid over me like a veil of fire. He could ignite my deepest desires with a single glance. I decided right then and there no more reading romance novels by candlelight. Can you tell me what those reasons are, or should I guess?
Since I probably can't stay all day, I'll tell you.
At least we're getting somewhere.
The first one is because it's a trap, Dutch, set for you and you alone. Why do you think they haven't killed me yet? They want you to look for me, to find me. Remember, you don't see them, they don't see you.
He'd mentioned that before, but the truth was difficult to comprehend, not to mention disturbing. And if I see them? I asked. He let his gaze travel over me once more.
Let's just say you're hard to miss.
So we'll do this incognito, you know, like Navy SEALs or SWAT or something.
It doesn't work that way.
That's not good enough for me. My hands curled into fists. We have to try. We can't just let them kill you.
You haven't heard the second reason.
That sounded foreboding. Okay, so tell me. I crossed my arms and waited.
You won't like it.
I'm a big girl, I said, raising my chin a notch. I can handle it.
Fair enough. I'm going to let my corporeal body pass away.
Every muscle in my body stilled.
It's not like I need it,
he continued with a callous shrug.
It slows me down, and, as you have witnessed yourself, makes me vulnerable to attack.
But in the camera, when you woke up from the coma, you disappeared. You dematerialized your human body.
Dutch, he said, casting me a chastising gaze from underneath his dark lashes. Not even I can do that.
Then how did you just disappear? I saw the tape.
I can interfere with electrical devices anytime I want to. So can you, if you concentrate.
I never knew that. I just thought...
Wrong, he said, his tone absolute.
He was so testy when he was being tortured. Fine, I was wrong. It's not like being a supernatural entity came with a manual.
True.
But that's no reason to let your corporeal body pass away. I mean, what will happen to you? You just said that if you die, they'll take you back to hell.
Even they don't know if they can take me back to hell or not. That's simply what they're hoping for. There's one surefire way to find out, I guess, he said, raising his brows at the challenge.
Wait, you don't know what will happen if they can take you back? He shrugged.
Not a clue, but it's doubtful.
But what if they can? What if you're sent back?
That's not likely to happen, he insisted. Who would do the sending?
Oh my God, I can't believe you're willing to take such a risk.
It's riskier than being alive here on Earth, Dutch,
he said, an angry edge to his voice.
And it's a risk I am no longer willing to take.
Riskier for who?
Riskier for you.
His answer frustrated me even more. I don't understand. Why is it riskier for me? He raked both hands through his dark hair. The gesture left it more must, sexy, and it took me a moment to refocus.
They're demons, Dutch, and there is only one thing in this universe they want more than human souls.
The breakfast burritos at Macho Taco? He rose and stood in front of me, towering over me.
They want you, Dutch. They want the portal. Do you know what will happen if they find you?
I bit my lower lip and offered a one-shouldered shrug. They'll have a way into heaven.
I can't let that happen.
Right, I said sadly. I forgot. You'll have to kill me. He stepped closer and lowered his voice.
And I will, Dutch, in a heartbeat.
Great. It was nice to know he had my back.
You're hurt?
He asked, lifting my chin with his fingers. Stop reading my mind, I said defensively.
I can't read your mind. I'm like you. I read emotions, feelings, and you're hurt.
How did a demon find its way onto this plane in the first place? I asked, pulling away from him. I stood and started pacing. He sat back down, propped his feet again. For the first time, I noticed the boots he was wearing. They were black, part cowboy and part motorcycle. I liked them. I thought it was almost impossible for demons to get through the gate.
Yes, almost impossible. Every once in a while, a demon braves the void and searches for a way through the maze. It's hazardous, and they rarely make it. Most are lost in the oblivion of eternity.
He nudged my mouse, and my computer came alive, which meant my wallpaper popped up, which meant Reyes's picture popped up, his mugshot, the only picture I had of him. He frowned. I resisted the urge to crawl under the bar stool. He could probably still have seen me anyway. You were saying?
Right.
He refocused on me.
If one miraculously makes it through the gate, it still isn't really here. It has to piggyback onto the soul of a newborn. It's the only way for them to gain access to this plane. The plane that you and I happen to be on, he reminded me.
But that's not what you did when you escaped from hell. You didn't have to piggyback.
I was different. Once I escaped, I could navigate between the planes as easily as you walk through a doorway.
How is that possible?
It just is, he said evasively. I was made different. I was created for a reason. When the fallen were thrown from heaven, they were banished from the light. Thus, the need for me. I was a tool, a means to an end. But being born on Earth was perhaps not the wisest decision I've ever made. My corporeal body has made me too vulnerable and should be destroyed, the physical evidence of the key hidden.
When Reyes was born in human form, the key, the map to hell that was imprinted on his body when he was created, appeared on his human body as well. I wondered what his human parents had thought of it, what the doctors had thought, a tattoo on a newborn. I wasn't sure how it all worked, but apparently the tattoo was the means for Satan to escape from hell. He didn't want to escape, to render himself vulnerable, until a portal was born, and he sent his son to this plane to wait for one. Reyes was supposed to retrieve Satan and all his armies the minute I was born. Instead, he was born upon the earth as well, to be with me, to grow up with me. But he was kidnapped from his birth parents long before his dream could come to fruition.
If those demons make it back through the gate, he continued, they'll have the key, and my father can escape, which is exactly what he'll do.
He leaned back in the chair and clasped his hands behind his head.
You know how people have prophesied about the end of time since pretty much the beginning of time?
Yes, I said, knowing instinctively the rest of his anecdote would end badly.
They have no idea what hell awaits them if my father gets this key.
He dropped his hands and leaned forward.
And the first thing he would do is come after you.
I don't care. He fixed a dubious scowl on me.
Of course you do.
No, I don't. You can't just let your body die. We don't know what'll happen. They could get you either way.
Let's say, for argument's sake, they were no longer a threat, that you were able to vanquish them all.
Me?
There's still this one little problem I have called life behind bars. I'm not going back to prison, Dutch.
What?
He was worried about that?
I don't understand. You can leave your body anytime you want. It's not like those bars can hold you.
It's not that simple.
He was being evasive again, holding something back, Reyes, please tell me.
It's not important.
He reached up and turned my computer screen off, as if it suddenly bothered him. Reyes, I placed a hand on his arm, coaxed him back to me. Why isn't it that simple? He worked his jaw and glanced down at his boots.
There's a side effect.
When you leave your body?
Yes. When I leave, my body mimics a seizure-like state. If I do it too often, the prison doctors put me on drugs that keep me from seizing. Drugs that have an unacceptable side effect.
His gaze traveled back to mine.
They keep me from separating. I'm stuck in prison, and you are completely vulnerable.
Oh. Well, then keep running. I'll help you, but let me get you medical attention for now. I have a friend who's a doctor, and I know a couple of nurses. They would see you for me. They wouldn't turn us in, I promise. Let me find you, and we can worry about prison later.
Because if you find me, he finds me, and I go back to prison no matter who you know.
That again? Who finds you?
The guy your uncle is glued to your tail.
That took me by surprise. What are you talking about?
Your uncle put a tail on you, probably in the hopes that I'd show up.
Uncle Bob put a tail on me? I asked, appalled.
Aren't you supposed to notice those types of things? You know, to detect them?
He winked teasingly. You're changing the subject, I said, trying to recover from the wink.
Sorry.
He sobered.
Okay. So you want me to stay alive because there is a slight possibility I could be sent back to hell. Does that about sum it up?
Reyes, you escaped from there. The same being that was created with a map to the gates of hell on his body. You're the key to their freedom, and you absconded with it. You were their general, their most powerful warrior, and you betrayed them. What do you think will happen to you if you're sent back? Not to mention the fact that if you are sent back, your father, who just happens to be Satan, by the way, will have the key to escape from hell himself.
If.
And it's an if I'm not willing to risk. Hell has to be torturous enough without being public enemy number one, and to risk Satan getting out? I crossed my arms. Tell me where you are.
Dutch, you can't just come after me, even if you could vanquish them all.
Why do you keep saying that? I asked, exasperated. I'm a bright light that lures the departed in so they can cross through me. I'm kind of like one of those bug zappers, if you think about it. And I'm fairly certain vanquisher of demons is not in my job description. A soft grin slipped across his handsome face and somehow managed to melt my kneecaps.
If you had even an inkling of what you were capable of, the world would be a dangerous place indeed.
That wasn't the first time I'd heard such a thing, and worded just as vaguely. Okay, why don't you tell me then? I asked, knowing he wouldn't.
If I told you what you were capable of, you would have the advantage. That's a risk I can't take.
What on planet Earth could I do to you? With a growl, he stood and pulled me to him.
God, the things you ask, Dutch.
He wrapped his long fingers around my neck and tilted my chin up with his thumb, a split second before he captured my mouth with his own. The kiss skyrocketed from hesitant to demanding instantly. His tongue dived inside my mouth, and I reveled in the taste of him, the earthy smell of him. I leaned into his embrace, tilted my head to allow the kiss to deepen, then held on to his wide shoulders for dear life. One hand wound around the nape of my neck, while the other held me to him as he walked me back, pressed me against the wall. Taking both my hands into one of his, he fastened them against the wall above my head as his other hand explored at will. He cupped Danger, brushed over her peak until it hardened beneath him, and I couldn't stop a soft moan from escaping my lips. He grinned, dipped his head, and pressed his hot mouth against my pulse. Molten lava swirled in my abdomen, causing sensual quakes to shudder through me. I fought for the strength to stop him. Seriously, this was ridiculous. My utter lack of control where Reyes was concerned bordered on deplorable. So what if he was the son of Satan, reportedly the most beautiful being ever to have walked the paths of heaven? So what if he was formed from the heat of 1,000 stars? So what if he made my insides gooey? I had to get a grip, and it needed to be on something other than Reyes's manly parts. Wait, I said when his tongue sent a shiver straight to my core. I have to give you fair warning.
Oh?
He leaned back and leveled a lazy, sensual gaze on me. I'm not going to allow you to let your corporeal body die.
And you're going to stop me?
He asked, his voice skeptical. I pushed him away, picked up my bag, and headed out the door. Just before I closed it, I looked back at him and said, I'm going to find you. Chapter 4. If it has tires or testicles, it's gonna give you trouble. Bumper sticker. I locked the door behind me, essentially leaving the son of Satan in my apartment, alone, annoyed, and quite possibly sexually frustrated. A niggling in the back of my mind had me hoping I didn't make him angry. I would hate for him to catch my bachelorette pad on hellfire. But really, he was being ridiculous, utterly ridiculous. The whole thing reminded me of my elementary school days when my best friend said, "Boys are yucky and we should throw rocks at them." I stomped across the parking lot, allowing the cool breeze to calm my shaking desire, and cut through my dad's bar to get to the interior set of stairs. My dad was an Albuquerque cop who, like my Uncle Bob, skyrocketed through promotion after promotion until they both made detective, with my help, naturally. I'd been solving crimes for them since I was 5, though solving might be a strong word. I'd been relaying information from the departed to help them solve crimes since I was 5. Better. While my uncle was still on the APD payroll, my dad retired a few years ago and bought the bar I now worked out of. My office was on the 2nd floor. I also lived about 2 feet from the back door. It was all very convenient. Dad was in early. A light from his office filtered into the dark lounge, so I wound around bistro tables, cornered the bar, and ducked my head inside. "Hey, Dad," I said, startling him. He jerked at the sound of my voice and turned toward me. He had been studying a picture on the far wall, his long, thin frame resembling a popsicle stick clothed in wrinkled Kenware. Clearly, he'd been working all night. A bottle of Crown Royal sat open on his desk, and he held a near-empty goblet in his hand. The emotion radiating off him took me by surprise. It was wrong somehow, like when a server once brought me iced tea after I'd ordered a diet soda. The normally mundane task of taking that first sip sent a shock to my system, the flavor unexpected. While Dad had his occasional off days, his flavor was different, unexpected. A deep sorrow mixed with the overwhelming weight of hopelessness barreled toward me to steal the breath from my lungs. I straightened in alarm. "Dad, what's wrong?" He forced a weathered smile across his face.
"Nothing, hon. Just getting some paperwork done," he lied, the deception like a sour note in my ear. But I'd play along. If he didn't want to talk about what was bothering him, I'd let it slide. For now. "Have you been home?" I asked. He put down the glass and lifted a tan jacket off the back of his chair.
"Headed that way right now. Did you need anything?"
God, he was a bad liar. Maybe that's where I got it from.
"Nope, I'm good. Tell Denise Hay for me."
"Charlie," he said, a warning tone leveling his voice.
"What? I can't say hey to my favorite stepmother?"
With a weary sigh, he shrugged into his jacket.
"I need a shower before the lunch crowd descends. Sammy should be here soon if you want some breakfast."
Sammy, Dad's cook, made huevos rancheros to die for. "I may get something later." He was in a hurry to get out of there, or possibly to get away from me. He slid past without making eye contact, despair rolling off him like a thick, muddy vapor.
"Be back in a few,"
he said, as cheerful as a mental patient on suicide watch.
"Kay,"
I said back, just as cheerfully. He smelled like honey lemon cough drops, the scent lingering in his office. When he was gone, I strolled inside it and glanced at the picture he'd been looking at. It was a photo of me, around the age of 6. My bangs were crooked, and both of my front teeth were missing. I was eating watermelon nonetheless. Juice dripped from my fingers and off my chin. But what caught my attention, what had caught my dad's attention, was the dark shadow hovering just over my shoulder. A smudged fingerprint on the glass gave proof that Dad had been examining that same spot. I glanced down to the top of a bookshelf housed underneath his montage of humorous family moments. He'd set out several photographs of me,
each one featuring a dark shadow somewhere in the background, each one smudged with a fingerprint in that exact same spot. And I couldn't help but wonder what Dad was doing.
Well, that and what the dark shadow meant, because even I didn't know that one. Was it a byproduct of grim reaperism? Or maybe, just maybe, it was Reyes, his dark robe almost visible, almost capturable. The thought intrigued me. Growing up, I'd seen him only a handful of times. Had he been there more often? Watching over me? Protecting me?
When I arrived at my office, sure enough, two men in crisp navy suits sat waiting. They stood, each offering a hand.
"Ms. Davidson," one said.
He showed his ID, then tucked it away inside his jacket, just like on TV. It was wicked cool, and I realized I needed a jacket with an inside pocket if I were ever to be taken seriously. I usually kept my laminated PI license in the back pocket of my jeans, where it got bent and crinkled and thoroughly mutilated. The other agent did the same, taking my hand in one of his and flashing his ID with the other simultaneously. They were very coordinated, and they looked like brothers. Though one had a few years on the other, both sported light blonde crews and transparent blue eyes that, in any other situation, wouldn't have been nearly so creepy as I was finding it.
"I'm Agent Foster," the first one said. "This is Special Agent Powers. We're investigating the disappearance of Mimi Jacobs."
At the mention of Mimi's name, Cookie knocked over a pencil cup. That wasn't so bad until she tried to grab it and sideswiped a lamp in the process. While pencils and other writing paraphernalia went flying, the lamp fell halfway to the floor, stopping to crash against the front of her desk when she grabbed the cord. Reacting to the sound, she pulled too hard, and the lamp ricocheted back up, crashing into the back of her computer monitor and knocking off the ceramic wiener dog Amber had given her for Christmas. Subtle. After a 5-minute trailer of the young and the accident-prone, one that would give me the giggles for months to come, I turned back to our guests. "Would you like to step into my office?"
"Certainly," Agent Foster said, eyeing Cookie like she needed to be locked up.
As I led the way, I flashed her my best incredulous look. She lowered her eyes. Thankfully, the wiener dog landed in the trash can atop a cushion of papers and didn't break. She fished it out, keeping her gaze averted.
"I'm sorry, but I'm not sure I've ever heard of a Mimi Jacobs," I said, pouring myself a cup of coffee as they took a seat in front of my desk. Cookie was excellent at keeping the coffee fresh and the hugs warm. Or maybe it was the coffee warm and the hugs fresh. Either way, it was a win-win.
"Are you sure?" Foster asked.
He seemed like the young, cocky type. I wasn't particularly fond of the young, cocky type, but I was trying really hard to get past my first impression.
"She's been missing for almost a week, and a notepad with your name and number scribbled on it was the only thing on her desk when she disappeared."
She must have written my name and number down when she talked to Cookie. I turned back to them, stirring my coffee in doe-eyed innocence. "If Mimi Jacobs has been missing for almost a week, why are you just now coming to me?" The older one, Powers, chafed, probably because I'd answered a question with a question. He was clearly used to getting answers with his questions, silly rabbit.
"We didn't think much of the note until we realized you were a private investigator. We thought she might have hired you."
"Hired me for what?" I asked, fishing. He shifted in his chair.
"That's what we're here to find out."
"So she wasn't in trouble, maybe with the company she works for?" The men glanced at each other. In any other situation, I would have shouted, "Eureka!" Internally, anyway. But I felt as though I had just handed them the perfect scapegoat. They knew more and were not about to tell me.
"We've considered that, Ms. Davidson, but we would appreciate it if that information were kept between us."
So, not the company. One possibility down, 27,000 to go. Apparently satisfied, they both stood. Foster handed me a business card.
"We need to insist that you contact us if she tries to get in touch with you."
His tone held the slightest hint of warning. I tried not to giggle. "Absolutely," I said, leading them back out. I stopped before opening the door that separated Cookie's office and mine. "Sorry I couldn't be of more help, and you have to leave now." Foster cleared his throat uncomfortably when I hesitated a moment more.
"Right, okay. We'll be in touch if we need anything else."
As they stood waiting behind me, I turned the knob slowly, jiggled it a little, then opened the door. Cookie was typing away at her computer. If I knew her, she'd been listening in on our conversation through the speakerphone.
Miss Davidson, Foster said,
tipping an invisible hat as they walked past. After the agents left, Cookie turned an exasperated expression on me.
Jiggling the knob, that was subtle.
Oh yeah, Grace, could you have knocked anything else over? She cringed at the reminder.
Do you think they suspected anything?
So many possibilities came to mind. Duh, you think? Only if they weren't complete idiots.
Yes, I said instead, the lack of inflection in my voice insinuating all of the above.
But shouldn't we be working with them instead of against them? She asked.
Not at this precise moment in time.
Why not?
Mostly because they're not FBI agents. She sucked in a soft breath.
How do you know?
Really? I asked. The last thing I wanted to explain was how I could tell when someone was lying for the 1,000th time.
Right, she said, shaking her head. Sorry.
Then she gasped.
You knew they weren't real FBI agents?
I had my suspicions.
And you led them into your office anyway, alone?
My suspicions don't always pan out. She thought about that a moment and calmed.
True. Remember that time you tackled the mailman and...
I held up a hand to stop her. Some things were just better left unsaid. Cancel looking into the business stuff, I said, thinking out loud. I'd bet my virtual farm that's a dead end. Concentrate on finding a connection between Mimi and Janelle York.
Besides the fact that they went to high school together, she asked.
No, let's start there. Dig into both their backgrounds, see if anything stands out. Just then, Uncle Bob walked into the office. Or, well, stormed into the office. He was always so stressed. It was probably time for us to have the talk. He needed a girlfriend before he stroked. Or maybe a blow-up doll. If you're going to be a grumpy bear, I said, pointing to the door, you can just leave the same way you came in, Mr. Man. I twirled my finger in circles, motioning for him to do an about-face, make like a sheep, and get the flock out of there. He stopped short, eyeing me with a mixture of confusion and annoyance.
I'm not grumpy,
he sounded offended. It was funny.
I just want to know what you've gotten yourself into now.
It was my turn to be offended.
What?
I asked.
Why, I never...
No time for your theatrics, he said, shaking a finger.
That'd teach me.
How do you know Warren Jacobs?
What the heck? Word traveled fast in the crime-fighting world. I just met him this morning. Why?
Because he's asking for you. Not only is his wife missing, but a car dealer he stalked and threatened to kill was found dead last night. Call me crazy, but I think there might be a connection.
Son of a bitch, I thought with a heavy sigh. Instead of plain old crazy, can I call you Crazy Bob?
No.
CB for short? When I only got a glare, I asked. Then can I see him?
He's being questioned right now and will probably lawyer up any second. What's going on?
Cookie and I glanced at each other, then spilled our guts like frogs in a biology lab. We told Uncle Bob everything, even the writing on the wall thing. He took out his phone and ordered one of his minions to check out the diner.
You should have told me, he said after hanging up, his tone scolding.
Like I've had a chance. But since we're on the subject, there are two men posing as FBI agents to get to her, and they want her bad. Alarmed, Uncle Bob, or Yubi, as I like to call him, though rarely to his face, took down their description.
This is serious stuff, he said.
Tell me about it. We have to find Mimi before they do.
I'll get a hold of the local feds and let them know they have a couple of impersonators. But you should have called me when this whole thing started.
Well, I didn't think I would need to, since you're having me tailed and all. His jaw clamped down, totally busted. With a heavy sigh, he stepped closer, towering over me, and lifted my chin gently.
Reyes Farrow is a convicted murderer, Charlie. This is for your own protection. If he contacts you, will you please let me know?
Will you call off the tale? I asked in turn. When he hesitated, then shook his head, I added, Then may the best detective win. I strode out the door, realizing what a ridiculous statement that was. As Uncle Bob, a veteran detective for the Albuquerque Police Department, was the ace of spades when it came to investigations. I was kind of like a three of hearts. As I walk down the block to my friend Perry's tattoo parlor, I scan the street for the shadow Yubi'd assigned to me, with no luck. It had to be someone good. Uncle Bob wouldn't send a rookie to watch over me. I stopped in front of Perry's shop, not because I particularly needed a tattoo, but because Perry could see auras. I could see auras as well, but I figured maybe I'd missed something over the years. How could I see auras and dead people and sons of Satan, and yet in all my days never see a demon? Heck, I didn't even know demons existed until Reyes told me, much less that they would be fighting tooth and nail to get to me, to get through me. My breath caught as another realization dawned. If demons existed, heck, if Satan himself existed, then angels surely existed as well. Seriously, how could I be so out of the loop? Hopefully Perry knew something I didn't, other than the correct timing for a 1970 Plymouth Duster with a supercharged 440 big block. I didn't even know cars had timing issues. Speaking of which, it was still early in tattoo parlor time, so I was surprised to see Perry's front door open. I stepped inside. "I need some light," I heard her call out from the back.
"On it," came a male voice.
Then I heard scrambling in the back room as I walked up behind Perry. She was bent under a refurbished dentist chair, electrical wires in a heap at her knees. "Thanks," she said, quietly deciphering the wires.
"What?"
the guy in the back room called out. Startled, Perry jolted upright and hit her head on the seat of the chair before turning back to me.
"Charlie, damn it,"
she said, raising one hand to shield her eyes and the other to rub the sting from her head.
"You can't just walk up behind me. You're like one of those floodlights shining from a cop car in the middle of the night."
I chuckled as she fumbled for her sunglasses.
"You said you needed light."
Perry was a graphic designer who turned to body art to keep the bill collectors at bay. Luckily, she'd found her calling, and she did the profession proud with full sleeves of sleek lines, tiger lilies, and fleur-de-lis, and a couple of skulls thrown in to impress the clientele. She'd designed the Grim Reaper I now sported on my left shoulder blade. It was a tiny being with huge, innocent eyes and a fluid robe that looked like smoke. How she managed that with tattoo ink was beyond me. She slipped her shades on, then looked back at me with a sigh.
"I said I needed light, not a starburst. I swear you're going to permanently blind me one day."
As I said, Perry could see auras. Mine was just really bright. She grabbed a bottle of water off the counter and sat on the broken dentist's chair, propping her hiking boots onto two crates on either side of her and resting her elbows on her knees. I grabbed a water out of a small fridge and turned back to her, struggling not to crack up at her indelicate position.
"So, what's up, Reaper?"
"I can't find the flashlight," the guy yelled from the back room.
"Never mind," she called back before grinning at me. "All beauty, no brains, that one."
I nodded. She liked beauty. Who didn't?
"Okay, so you're pretending to be all cool and collected," she said, studying me with a practiced eye. "But you're about as serene as a chicken on the chopping block. What's going on?"
Dang, she was good. I decided to get right to the point. "Have you ever seen a demon?" Her breathing slowed as she absorbed my question.
"You mean like a hellfire and brimstone demon?"
"Yes."
"Like a minion of hell demon?"
"Yes," I said again.
"Like, yes,"
I repeated for the third time. The subject made my stomach queasy, and the thought of one torturing Reyes, not that the little shit didn't deserve to be tortured just a tad, but still.
"So, they're real?"
"I'm going to take that as a no," I said, my hopes evaporating. "It's just, I think I have a few after me, and I was hoping you might know something I didn't."
"Damn."
She glanced at the floor in thought, then refocused on me. At least I think she did. It was hard to tell with her shades on.
"Wait, there are demons after you?"
"Sort of." After she stared a long time, long enough to be considered culturally insensitive, she bowed her head.
"I've never seen one," she said, her voice quiet. "But I know there are things out there, things that go bump in the night. And not just the prostitute next door. Scary things. Things that are impossible to forget."
I tilted my head in question. "What do you mean?"
When I was 14, a group of friends and I were having a slumber party, and like most 14-year-olds do eventually, we decided to have a séance.
Okay, this was going nowhere good.
So we went down into my basement and were all séancing and chanting and conjuring a spirit from beyond when I felt something, like a presence.
Like a departed?
No. She shook her head, thinking back. At least, I don't think so. They're cold. This being was just sort of there. I felt it brush up against me like a dog.
One hand gripped the opposite arm in remembrance, a soft shiver echoing through her body.
No one else felt it, of course, until I said something.
She glanced up at me, a dire warning in her eyes.
Never tell a group of 14-year-old girls having a séance in a dark basement that you felt something brush up against you, for your own safety.
I chuckled. I promise. What happened?
They jumped up screaming and ran for the stairs. It freaked me out, so naturally I ran too.
Naturally.
I just wanted away from whatever had materialized in my basement, so I ran like I had a reason to live despite my suicidal tendencies.
Perry had been goth when goth wasn't cool. Kind of like now.
I thought I was in the clear when I reached the top stair. Then I heard a growl, deep, guttural. Before I knew what was happening, I fell halfway down the stairs, spraining a wrist and bruising my ribs. I scrambled up and out of there without looking back. It took a while for me to realize I didn't fall. My legs were pulled out from under me, and I was dragged.
She lifted her pant leg and unzipped her knee-high boots to show me a jagged scar on her calf. It looked like claw marks.
I've never been so scared.
Holy crap, Parr. What happened then?
When my dad found out why we were all screaming, he laughed and went down into the basement to prove to us nothing was there.
And?
Nothing was there,
she said with a shrug. Did you show him the wound?
Oh, hell no.
She shook her head like I just asked her if she ate children for breakfast.
They'd already filed me in the F's for freak of nature. I wasn't about to confirm their suspicions.
Holy crap, Parr, I repeated.
Tell me about it.
So, what makes you think it was a demon?
I don't. It wasn't a demon. Or, well, I don't think it was. It was something more.
How do you know? She twisted the leather straps at her wrist.
Mostly because I knew its name.
I froze for a moment before saying, Come again?
Do you remember what I told you about my accident?
She glanced at me, her brows drawn together.
Sure I do.
Perry had died when she was 6 in a car accident. Thankfully, an industrious EMT brought her back. After that, she could see auras, including those of the departed. She'd learned that if she saw an aura with a particularly grayish tint and no body attached, it was the soul of someone who'd passed. It was a ghost.
When I died, my grandfather was waiting for me.
I remember, I said, and thankfully he sent you back. I owe him a fruit basket when I get to heaven. She reached over and squeezed my hand in a rare moment of appreciation. Awkward.
I'd met him only once, she said, wrapping both hands around her water. The only thing I remembered about him was that he had Great Danes taller than I was, yet I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt he was my grandfather. And when he told me it wasn't my time, that I had to go back, the last thing I wanted to do was leave him.
Well, I for one am glad he sent your ass packing. You would have been hell on wheels in heaven. She smiled.
You're probably right. But I never told you the strange part.
Most people find near-death experiences pretty strange.
True,
she said with a grin. So, it gets stranger?
A lot stranger.
She hesitated, drew in a long breath, then rested her gaze on me.
On the way back, you know, to Earth, I heard things.
That was new. What kinds of things?
Voices. I heard a conversation.
You eavesdropped? I asked, a little amazed such a thing was possible. On celestial beings?
I guess you could call it that, but I didn't do it on purpose. I heard an entire conversation in an instant, like it just appeared in my head. Yet I knew I wasn't supposed to hear it. I knew the information was dangerous. I learned the name of a being powerful enough to bring about the end of the world.
The end of the world? I asked, gulping when I did so.
I know how it sounds, believe me, But they were talking about this being that had escaped from hell and was born on Earth. My pulse accelerated by a hair's breadth, just enough to cause a tingling flutter in my stomach. They said that he could destroy the world. He could bring on the apocalypse if he so chose. I knew of only one being who had escaped from hell, only one being who had been born on Earth. And while I knew he was powerful, I couldn't imagine him powerful enough to bring about the freaking apocalypse. Then again, what was? I totally should have paid attention in catechism. And so, the night of the séance, in all my teenaged wisdom, I decided to summon him. I gaped, but only a little.
Right, because that's what we want to do, summon the very being who can destroy every living thing on Earth.
Exactly, she said, spacing my sarcasm. I thought I might convince him not to, you know, talk some sense into him.
And how did that work out for you?
She stopped and pursed her lips at me. I was 14, smartass. I tried to laugh, but it didn't quite make it past the lump in my throat.
So, for real, this being is going to bring on the apocalypse?
No, you're not listening.
She pressed her lips together before explaining.
I said he is powerful enough to bring on the apocalypse.
Okay, well, that was a plus. No prophecies of mass destruction.
And so, that night during the séance, I summoned him. By name.
Goosebumps crept up my legs and over my arms in anticipation. Either that or Dead Trunk Guy had found me again. I glanced around just in case.
But like I said, she continued, he's not what you think. He's not a demon.
Well, that's taking a frown and turning it upside down.
From the gist of the conversation, he is something so very much more.
He was more, all right.
Perry, I said, growing impatient, what's its name?
No way am I telling you, she said with a teasing sparkle in her eyes. Perry.
No, really.
She turned serious again.
I don't say it aloud. Ever. Not since that day.
Oh, right. Well,
before I could say anything else, she grabbed a piece of paper and scribbled onto it. This is it, but don't say it out loud. I get the feeling he doesn't like being summoned.
I took the paper, my hand shaking more than I'd have liked, and gasped softly when I read the name. Reaziel. Reyes. Reyes. The son of Satan.
It means the beautiful one, she said as I read it over and over again. I don't know what he is, she continued, unaware of my stupor, but he caused quite a stir on the other side, if you know what I mean. Chaos. Upheaval. Panic.
Yep, that would be Reyes.
Damn it.
Chapter 5. What happens if you get scared half to death, twice? T-shirt. My head reeling, I left Perry's shop stunned, wandering aimlessly toward home before I remembered I had a job to do. And a job I would do. Time to pull the curtains back on my shadow. Whomever Uncle Bob had assigned to follow me was about to have a very bad day. I opened my cell phone and answered as if it had been ringing. I stopped, incredulous. I looked around, gestured wildly. Meet? Now? Well, darn it, okay. You're in the alley to my right. You're that close? Are you crazy? You'll be caught. Surely someone will suspect you might get in touch with me. Surely... okay, fine. I closed the phone, scanned the area, then eased between two buildings, the passageway leading to an alley, all the while throwing furtive glances over my shoulder. After my production of Casablanca meets Mission Impossible, I hightailed it toward a dumpster and ducked behind it, waiting for my shadow to appear. As I sat scrunched, feeling oddly ridiculous, I played with Reyes's name in my head, let it shape and slide over my tongue. Reaziel, the beautiful one. Boy, did they have that right. But why would he hurt Perry? I calculated ages. If Perry had been 14 when she performed her little séance, then Reyes could have been no more than 8, 9 at the most. And he attacked her? Maybe it wasn't him. Maybe she summoned something else accidentally, something evil.
What you doing?
I started at the voice behind me, and, having flailed a bit, fell back, my palms and ass landing in an illegally dumped oil slick. Wonderful. I ground my teeth together and looked up at a grinning, departed gangbanger with more attitude than was socially acceptable. "Angel, you little shit!" He laughed aloud as I examined my filthy hands.
"That was awesome!"
Freakin' 13-year-olds. "I knew I should have exercised your ass when I had the chance." Angel died when his best friend decided to take out the puta bitch batos who'd invaded their turf by utilizing the drive-by technique of execution so popular with the kids today. Angel tried to stop him and paid the ultimate price, much to my eternal chagrin.
"You couldn't exercise a cat, much less a bat to the bunch of cano with gunpowder in his blood. Besides, you hate exercise."
Chuckling at his own joke, he took my outstretched hand and pulled me onto the balls of my feet. I needed to stay squatted behind the dumpster, the prime tactical position for an ambush.
"You don't have any blood," I pointed out helpfully. "Sure I do," he said, looking down at himself.
He wore a dirty white t-shirt with jeans hanging low on his hips, worn-out sneakers, and a wide leather wristband. His inky black hair was cropped short over his ears, but he still had a baby face and a smile so genuine it could melt my heart on contact.
"It's just kind of see-through now."
I scraped my hands down the side of the dumpster to no avail, wondering how many germs were hitching a ride in the process. "Do you have a reason for being here?" I asked, now swiping my hands at my pants. The oil was obviously going to remain stuck until I found some water and a professional-grade degreaser.
"I heard we got a case," he said.
While Angel had been a constant companion since my freshman days of high school, he agreed to become my lead investigator when I opened my PI business 3 years ago. Having an incorporeal being as an investigator was kind of like cheating on college entrance exams, nerve-wracking, yet oddly effective, and we'd solved many a case together. Facing no such quandaries with the oil slick, he sat down in front of me, his back against the dumpster, his eyes suddenly drawn to my hand as I knocked the rocks and soil off my left butt cheek.
"Can I help?" he asked, indicating my ass with a nod.
13-year-olds were so hormonal, even dead ones. "No, you can't help, and we suddenly have not one, but two cases." While Mimi was my professional priority, Reyes was my personal one. Neither was expendable, and I pondered which case I should put him on. I opted for Reyes because I simply didn't have any other resources in that area, but Angel wasn't going to like it. "How much do you know about Reyes?" I asked, hoping he wouldn't disappear or pull a 9mm and gank me. He eyed me a moment, shifted uncomfortably, then rested his elbows on his knees and looked off into the distance, or, well, into a warehouse. After a long while, he said,
"Reyes isn't our case."
I sucked in a soft breath with the mention of Reyes's otherworldly name. How did he know it? Better yet, how long had he known it? "Angel, do you know what Reyes is?" He shrugged.
"I know what he isn't."
He leveled an intent gaze on me.
"He isn't our case."
With a sigh, I sat on the pavement, slick or no slick, and leaned against the trash bin beside him. I needed Angel with me on this. I needed his help, his particular talents. After placing a dirty hand on his, I said, "If I don't find him, he's going to die." A dubious chuckle shook his chest, and in that instant, he seemed so much older than the 13 years he'd accumulated before he passed.
"If only it were that easy."
"Angel," I said, my tone admonishing, "you can't mean that." The look he stabbed me with was one of such anger, such incredulity, I fought the urge to lean away from him.
"You can't be serious," he said, as if I'd suddenly lost my marbles.
Little did he know, I'd lost my marbles eons ago. I knew Angel didn't like the guy, but I had no idea he felt such malevolence toward him.
"Is there a reason you're sitting in a puddle of oil talking to yourself?"
I looked up to find Garrett Swopes standing over me, a dark-skinned, silvery-eyed skip tracer who knew just enough about me to be dangerous.
Then I glanced back at Angel. He was gone, naturally. When the going gets tough, the tough refuse to talk about it and insist on running away to stew in their own crabby insecurities. I struggled to my feet and realized my jeans would never be the same again. "What are you doing here, Swopes?" I asked, swiping at my ass for the second time that morning. As skip tracers went, Garrett was one of the best. We'd been fairly decent friends for a while until Uncle Bob, in a moment of weakness brought on by one too many brewskis, told him what I did for a living. Not the PI part. Garrett already knew that. But the Charlie sees dead people part. After that, our slightly flirtatious relationship took a left turn into hostile territory, as though he were angry that I would try to pull off such a scheme. A month later, Garrett was slowly but surely and quite reluctantly beginning to believe in what I could do, having seen the evidence firsthand. Not that I gave a shit if he believed me or not, especially after his behavior over the last month, but Garrett was good at his job. He came in handy from time to time. As for the skeptic in him, he could bite my ass. At the moment, he seemed to be contemplating that very thing. He tilted his head and was eyeing the general vicinity of my lower half as I knocked dirt and rock chips off it when he asked, "Can I help?" "No, you can't help. Didn't I just have this conversation?" "Stop channeling Angel and answer my question." "Wait." Reality sank in slowly but surely. My jaw dropped for a moment before I caught it and turned on him. "Oh, my God. You're the tail." "What?" He stepped back, his brows drawn sharply together in denial. "Son of a bitch!" After staring aghast for a solid minute, thank goodness I'd recently practiced aghast in the mirror, I watched him try to disguise the guilt so plainly on his features. Then I threw a punch that landed on his shoulder with a solid thud. "Ouch!" He covered his shoulder protectively. "What the hell was that for?" "Like you don't know," I said, stalking away. I couldn't believe it. I simply could not believe it. Well, I could, but still. Uncle Bob had actually put Garrett Swopes on my tail. Garrett Swopes, the same man who'd been taunting and badgering me about my ability for the last month, swearing to have me locked away or, at the very least, burned as a witch. Skeptics were such drama queens. And Uncle Bob put him on my tail? The injustice of it all. The indignation, the... Wait. I stopped short and considered all the possibilities, all the wonderful, glorious possibilities. Garrett had been trailing behind me when I stopped, and, his reaction time being what it was, almost ran me down.
"Did you go off your meds again, Charles?" he asked, sidestepping around me while trying to change the subject.
He'd taken to calling me Charles recently, probably to annoy me, so I didn't let it. And my meds were none of his concern. I turned, planted my best death stare on him, and said, "Oh, no, you don't."
"What?"
He stepped back. I stepped forward. "You aren't getting off that easy, buddy boy," I said, stabbing him with an index finger. The confused expression on his face would have been comical had I not felt so blindsided that my uncle put him, of all people, on my tail. And I was in dire need of an investigator who was on Albuquerque's finest's payroll. Free labor.
"Did you just call me buddy boy?"
"Damn straight I did. And if you know what's good for you," I said, taking another step toward him, "you won't insult me for not coming up with anything better on such short notice."
"Okay." He held up his hands in surrender. "No insults, I swear."
I trusted him about as far as I could throw him. He was totally going to insult me the first chance he got, damn it. "How long have you been tailing me?"
"Charles," he said, trying to come up with a good story.
"Don't even," I poked him again for good measure. "How long?"
"First," he took hold of my shoulders and led me back toward the building as a car passed through the alley.
When we were out of harm's way, I crossed my arms and waited. With an acquiescent sigh, he admitted,
"Since the day Pharaoh disappeared from the long-term care unit."
I sucked in a sharp breath of indignation. "That was a week ago. You've been following me for a week? I can't believe Uncle Bob did this to me."
"Charlie," Garrett began, his voice sympathetic.
I didn't need his sympathy. "Don't. Yubi is so not getting a Christmas card this year."
When he spread his hands as if I were overreacting, I added, "And you can mark your name off the list as well."
"What did I do?"
he asked, following me as I cut across a parking lot toward the street. "Stalking isn't pretty, Swopes."
"It's not stalking when you're being paid for it."
I stopped and scowled at him.
"Well, when PD is paying you anyway, and your Uncle Bob didn't do anything to you, he figured there was a possibility Pharaoh would try to contact you, and for some unexplainable reason, he didn't want a convicted murderer hanging with his niece."
Always with the convicted murderer rap. "I'll make a deal with you."
"Okay,"
he said, his voice tainted with suspicion. "I need to find Reyes as much as you do, or, well, Uncle Bob. You help me, and I'll help you."
"Why?" he asked, still suspicious.
"You'd think I never kept up my side of the bargain. I almost always, nigh 100% of the time, tried really hard to attempt to hold up my side of any bargain in any given situation." Now for the hard part. The, "Yeah, I know he was convicted of murder and is an entity who was born of pure evil, but deep down inside he's really a good guy," part. "What all did Uncle Bob tell you about Reyes?" Garrett's brows knitted in thought, his gray eyes startling against his dark skin.
"Well, in a nutshell, he told me Pharaoh has been a resident of the penitentiary of New Mexico for the last 10 years for the brutal murder of his own father until he was accidentally shot in the head trying to save another inmate and was in a coma for a month, only to magically wake up and walk right out of the long-term care unit without anyone the wiser."
I let that soak in before commenting. "Okay, good start, but there's a lot my uncle doesn't know." With mouth tilting to the side in doubt, he asked,
"Which would be?"
Great. He was reverting back to Garrett the Skeptic Skip Tracer. "Reyes Pharaoh has saved my life on several occasions, and he continues to do so."
"Really?"
he said, the sarcasm in his tone undeniable. This was not going to be an easy sell. "Yes, really." A car behind me, wanting the parking space we were standing in, honked. I headed toward the street again.
"A man convicted of murder saves you?"
"Yes." When we reached the sidewalk, I stopped and gave him my full attention. "And he's a supernatural being." His mouth did that tilty thing again, but he decided to humor me.
"You mean like ghost supernatural or superhero supernatural?"
"Good question." "A little of both, actually." He sighed and raked his fingers through his hair. "Look, I don't have time to go into all the details," I said, charging forward. "Can you do something crazy for once in your life that goes against every bone in your body and trust me on this one?" After a long moment, he offered a reluctant nod. "Good, because I need to find him ASAP." I started for my apartment. Clean jeans were a must for any private investigator, and for said private investigator's sanity.
"Wait."
"Nope. Follow."
"Okay," he said, jogging to catch up.
He fell in step beside me.
"So Pharaoh is supernatural? You mean like you? He's a grim reaper?"
His question surprised me. I didn't think he'd believed a word I told him during our last sit-down. The one where he tried really hard to open his mind and listen to what I had to say instead of mocking me repeatedly. "He's not a grim reaper. He's sort of more."
"How much more?"
Suspicion suddenly edged his voice. "He's a man, Swopes, just like you, only, like, with superpowers."
"What kind of superpowers?"
I paused long enough to glower at him. "Would you stop with the 20 questions?
I just want to know what I'm up against."
"Look, I just need you to put out some feelers. You know, ask around, see if anyone has heard anything, I don't know, strange."
"Fine. I just have one more question."
"Okay." His gaze intensified.
"How do I kill it?" he asked.
Well, that wasn't very nice. All this time I'd been hoping evolution had eroded the male's thirst for blood. Apparently not. "You don't," I said, turning back to continue my trek. I was brought up short when a dark fog, thick and undulating, materialized into a man in front of me. Reyes stood blocking my path, a peculiar kind of anger glistening in his mahogany eyes.
What are you doing, Dutch?
He asked, his voice soft, menacing. Garrett had taken a step, then stopped again. He glanced at me, and then down the street, trying to figure out what I was looking at. I decided to ignore both his curiosity and Reyes's anger for the moment. Are you still alive?